Okay, now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. I try to say something really nice about all our speakers or come up with something catchy to say, and so I said, I go, hey, you got a nickname or something? He goes, yeah, it's Buster. His name's Buster. I said, I know him as Buster, but it was funnier when he told it to me. But Buster has a sobriety date of December 29th, 1984. Wow. Woo! His favorite AA slogan is think, 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 and keep it simple, stupid. He is traveled all the way from Visalia to Visalia, paid his own way, and I'd like to introduce tonight's speaker, Buster Burns. Come on up, Buster.
Hi, I'm Buster Alcoholic. I got sober my last drink was December 28th at the Stardust Hotel in Las Vegas, which most of you young people really know it's not there no more. I flew home that evening, and Sunday morning I was sitting around feeling sorry for myself, you know, talking to my wife how fucked up I was, and pardon my language, and trying to be remorseful and stuff. And so I called my brother, he was sober almost 2 years at the time, and he says, why don't you go to a meeting? Why don't you go to an AA meeting? So I called central office, and they said there's a meeting two blocks from you, straight down your street. And he says it started at 10:15. And I said, well, it's 10:20 now, and the guy from central office says, you can go in late, no problem. So I went down to that meeting, and it's still there now, except it's at Howell Hall down in Huntington Beach, California. And when I walked into that meeting, I felt comfortable. It was just something that took, everybody greeted me, and you know, somehow they paid attention to me, and everybody in that room, you go back to 1984, and Carol and Rick Evans, they're from Orange County too, and they'll attest to this, that most of the meetings down there, the people, they dressed really nice. I mean, this meeting here, I called it my movie star meeting, because the women basically all came from church and they were dressed up, and the men had suits and sports coats, and they were all dressed nice. And, you know, they just took me in my wing, and then for some reason, down in Orange County, we go to coffee after the meetings, and I went to coffee with them after the meeting, and they, you know, tried to tell me how stupid I was and all that kind of stuff. And this young kid, he was 2 years sober at the time, Larry B. Davis, he's still sober today. He took me under his wing, and we went to a meeting again that evening. And we went to a meeting Monday, and then Tuesday was New Year's Eve, and we went down to Santa Ana Club, and it used to be the Rice Paddy, Santa Ana Lano Club, and I used to drink down there, or the Garden Grove Lano Club, and it used to be a bar, then I used to go to Thursdays out in, I forget what city it was, but it used to be a bar too, so you know, the bars go into a Lano Club, and then this old timer sitting down there 32 years sober, you can imagine how I felt looking at this old man. And I said, what's that? He said, they're having a party at his house that evening. And I said, oh, bring your own bottle. And boy, he lit into me like I was an idiot. He says, we don't even talk like that in AA. And I said, okay, no problem. So then, you know, as I got to AA in I came out here in the service in 1969, and joined the Navy. And my brother just got home from Vietnam, and he said, join the Navy or the Air Force. He says, I don't want you to get killed. So I joined the Navy, and because I graduated high school, I became a corpsman. The Marine Corps don't have military or medical, so I went to the Marine Corps. And the first thing my brother said to me, he said, you dumb son of a bitch, you're going to die anyway. And I did go to Vietnam, and it's, you know, it's just how you want. And the whole year I was overseas, I never drank, but the night before I went overseas, I got drunk on Akadima wine, which is rice wine, and I'm sure most of you don't even know what that is. It's not here anymore either. But then when I came home, I got out of the Navy in 73, and out of the Huntington Beach, I bought a home in 74, and 76, I bought a bar in North Anaheim Boulevard in La Palma, in Anaheim, three blocks up from the Alano Club, the Anaheim Alano Club. And I had a few drunks that would, they'd slip or whatever, and then they'd go back down the Alano Club. So I went down there in 1976, and like I was petrified, I went up on the porch, and This guy said, oh, you're welcome. You can come in. You can come in. I said, I own a fucking bar. He said, doesn't matter. You can come in here. And no, never in my mind would I ever think that I was going to be an alcoholic. And then a few years later, I sold the bar. And I continued to drink, and it was just ridiculous. And in 1984, I hit my bottom. And I was working in construction, and this young man, 23 years sober, Harry Gregory, says, you stay sober 30 days, he said, I'll give you a job. So Larry worked with me for 30 days, and he became my first sponsor, and then I went with Harry. And I was with him for a year. I got my first cake with Harry, and you know, down there we call them birthdays. We don't call them anniversary, but you guys can call them anything you want up here. It was just a good meeting. So he put me out in charge of this. I was building this restaurant for George Santapiastro, and nobody in here knows who George Santapiastro is, but everybody in here knows his girlfriend at the time, Vanna White. And they got married, and they got a divorce, but George was kind of a unique fella in life. So then on my second year birthday, I went up to North Hollywood Alamo Club, and you know, they were all basically old grouchy bastards with 20 years or more. And, you know, they, at that time we raised our hand if we wanted to share, and I raised my hand, and Harry says, you only got 2 years sober, you ain't smart enough to say anything, keep your mouth shut. So I kept my mouth shut, and that was pretty good. And then as I got down, I went back to Orange County, this guy kind of befriended me. His name was Chuck C. He wrote the book New Pair of Glasses. His son's name is Chuck Chamberlain, Richard Chamberlain's his father. And this guy just liked his son so much that he had to write a book about it to relieve it. And I guess, I didn't see him when he died, but I guess at the end, I guess he did forgive his son, but I don't know. But he was a super nice guy to me and really educated in the program. And then Clancy was down there, and he was in the third, he had his story in the third edition of the big book, and most of you guys now are in the fourth edition. But it's just nice to know these people as you're going through your sobriety, as you meet these people. And, you know, like I say, when I started my sobriety, those people, they were super nice, super clean, and all of them were just as drunk and messed up as everybody else, you know. It's just, and to hear their stories, and I was sharing with Rick and Carol tonight about Irish Annie, you know, her story, when she spoke, she just made you cry, you know, just what she went through in life, almost being beat to death 100 times by her husband and stuff like that. You know, I knew early in life that I was going to be an alcoholic. My two brothers were alcoholics. My dad, he died in 64. He was an alcoholic. I never once rode in a car with him that he didn't have a bottle underneath his seat. And that was just the custom back then. And as I went through my drunkenness, you know, I never got a 502 or been in jail or anything like that. You don't have to. My bottom was just personal, and I was alcoholic poisoned and stinking, you know. It's just unbelievable. And I just had to quit drinking, and I was coming home from a Dodger game one night, and I got flagged, got pulled over. This highway patrolman picked me up, and I said, well, my brother-in-law is in LAPD. I said, if he'll come and get me, will you let me go? He looks behind me, and he says, you got picked up by the highway patrol. I said, you know Jerry Skelton? He looked around. My real name is Armin. He looked around the back seat and said, Buster, you son of a bitch. I just went to Jerry's retirement party with this guy 2 weeks ago. So he let me go. So I didn't get a DUI. But it's just, you know, and my whole life I've been lucky, you know, to getting out of scrapes and scraps and never having to do any time or any prison time. No, never got a DUI. Should have had 1,000 of them. I was complete, you know, a drunk. But, you know, you get alcoholic poisoning, you're pretty drunk. And it was just an enjoyable life. And then, you know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I met such good people, and they, every one of them, and I work with two guys now, which I call a sponsor. Keith Dantley died a couple months ago. This guy was 11 years old in 1973, and he got to meet Bill Wilson. His dad was 20 years sober. Keith couldn't stay sober. Every year on his birthday, he would go out and get drunk. For 10 years, he did that with me. He died 20 years sober. So that was pretty good. And then Larry, Ugly Larry, he's still hanging out at the Alano Club down there in Garden Grove. He couldn't stay sober a year at a time, you know, but now he's got 10 years. You know, those are the only two people I'm working with right now. And, you know, long-haired Rich says, you know, you're always working with people. I mean, I try to help people, but I don't have time, and I really, it's not fair of me to not work with people, but and I'm just selfish now. When I moved up here 6 years ago, this is really a different place than where I came from. You know, when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, we used to go travels. Four of us would travel every Wednesday to a different meeting in L.A. County or Orange County. You know, we'd go south, we'd go north, and we went down to Anaheim Street to the Alano Club, and everybody down there is basically a vagrant, homeless, worthless people. And some of those people down there had 20, 30 years sobriety, and they were just down there helping other people, and it was unbelievable. Then we'd leave there, and we'd go down to the Longshoreman's Hall, and sitting in cushy chairs, and, you know, just a beautiful meeting. And I mean, it's only 10 blocks away, but it's just how AA is. And, you know, I got to be friends with Armando Ramos. He was lightweight champ of the world in 1971, 1973, and he died fatter than me. And he died 4 years ago. And then it's just how you're doing. Then I was working out at the Riviera Country Club. We remodeled the women's toilets out there because they only had four toilets for the women. We expanded it to 11. And they were filming the movie Bobo out there, which later became Walk Like a Man with Howie Mandel, Christopher Lloyd, and Cloris Leachman. And she came in the restroom. I had 10 guys in there working. And she just came in there and pulled her dress up and straightened everything. And all my guys just stopped looking. Everybody else has seen it. You know, she was really a nice lady. And then, you know, I met Howie Mandel and O.J. Simpson, and he was a super nice young man, shook my hand, and then later he killed his wife, but, you know, just things you got to go through. But AA is it's a life, and I've been to 10 states, to AA meetings in 10 different states, and I'm going back to Illinois next month, and I'll go to more meetings back there. When my mom died, me and my brother and two cousins all went to an AA meeting. I mean, that was the minority of the family. The whole family's drunks, or should be an AA. And it's I was down in Louisiana a year before I moved up here. I remodeled a Walmart down there, and this kid, he was my plumber on the job, and I couldn't stand him. He just drove me nuts. His name was Luke. I said, Luke, why don't you go get drunk? He said, I can't. I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. That day forward, he became my best friend. You know, I understood him from then on, and he was 6 months sober at the time, and he stayed sober. I called him 6 months after I came home to California, and he died. He got electrocuted. And he was the nicest young man in the world. You know, he was just lost, and he got sober for a year, and boom, he died. I called his girlfriend. She said, Buster, Luke's died. I said, ah. And then I came up here, and I was going to meetings in San Pedro and stuff, and I was lost in the world. I didn't know what to do, and my brother called me, and he says, why don't you come on up to Visalia and see how you like it up here? So I got here. I was 208 pounds, and I'm 308. That's in 6 years. I went blind, both eyes, and I'm a veteran, so I got to go to the VA hospital in San Francisco, and they blinded me in this eye. Then they sent me to an outside surgeon for this eye, and he did it in 20 minutes, and I got 20/20 vision. But it's, you know, it's great. And then I got valley fever, and then I'm second stage allergies. This is a beautiful place to live when you got second stage allergies. And I was married 39 years, and, you know, she was a wonderful lady, and she still is. And I just, you know, when you can't take no more, no matter what you're doing, you know, 22 years sober, I couldn't take any more. I knocked her up in high school, and then we got married when I came home from boot camp leave. And I had another kid before her in high school with another girl. By the time I graduated high school, I impregnated two women, and, you know, I was kind of like the go-to guy for booze because I had an older brother. My older brother was crippled, and he had polio, and he couldn't do anything in life but drink. And he died 6 years ago of alcoholic poisoning. When I came to California, he was 8 years sober, but he couldn't take it no more. He had to go out there and sample it again, but he never got back to us. And I don't think I could, if I slipped, which is sobriety loses its priority, not relapse, is I don't think I could make it back because I got too much pride. I couldn't come back and see it. But I share that, but as I see more and more people and I come back to these meetings and I see people that slipped and came back, but I hit my bottom at 34. I had to quit drinking. I didn't enjoy it anymore. And King Alcohol is probably the toughest person I've ever met in my life, or the toughest thing I've ever met. I've seen him put big men on their knees, and I've seen him kill people. It's just unbelievable. And, you know, as you go through the book, and, Rick Evans Love, Step 1, you know, when I did my fourth step, my sponsor, you know, after he got done crying, he said, burn it. And I did. And I release it. Now I'm hearing that they save them for 10 years and go back and read them and see how much they've grown in those 10 years. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, we had a telephone at home, a landline maybe. And, you talk to people, you'd have to either make arrangements or call them when you got home from work at different times or whatever. And nowadays, then the beeper came in. Then, boy, that was great. You know, you didn't have to get up the freeway to get a payphone. And then we got the cell phone, and then I shared Monday night in a meeting. Half of you people in here won't even go into meetings in 10 years. You just stay at home texting each other. And when Bill started this, Bill and Bob, you know, nobody in the world could imagine what this would grow into. I mean, it's just, it's a wonderful life. You can do millions of things, and you can do everything in sobriety that you did drunk, except you can remember it. There's not one thing that we do that we did that we did when we were drunk. We can go dancing. We can go to parties. We can go to barbecues. We can go to ball games. We can do anything in the world sober. And if you don't believe that, just travel around the world. And if you ever leave this state, or if you ever leave this county or this city, you know, even go to Tulare, Fresno, get to know other people. You know, it's well worth it. And you make friends as you go all along the world. You know, Rick likes to travel a lot, like he meets Dan. Dan came up here from Riverside. He's up here on business or whatever, but still he came to a meeting. He didn't have to come to a meeting tonight. But it's just for your own sobriety and your own health. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I've never been picked up for fat driving, and I don't think I will. I'm trying to go on a diet, but every time I go into Walmart, I see they have larger sizes. I mean, I don't know which way to go. I mean, clothes are cheaper than diets. And it's just a phenomenal world, you know. It's what we go through and the people we meet. And, you know, when Harry's my sponsor right now, and he's got 43 years sobriety. And he's getting ready to die. You know, and then I won't have a sponsor no more. I could go back to Larry, but this guy helps you through your steps, does everything with you, but you can't stand him. But he's got 35 years of sobriety now. And, you know, but he's just one of those people. Hi, Larry, shake his hand. And if you ever want to meet him, just go down to the Owl Hall, 10:15 meeting on Sunday morning. I think they changed it to 9 now. But Larry's there, and he helps a lot of people. And that's, you know, you need to get started. And, you know, always put your hand out when you see the greeters out there. When I started in Alcoholics Anonymous, I became coffee maker. Then I became greeter. Then I was with this traveling group, but I couldn't do anything. Then I got a year. Guess what? I got to be GSR. You know, that's a commitment. And after I did GSR, guess what? I got to go to H&I. And there's thousands of people down at the Alano Club in H&I. Then I got to go to prisons and meet people. I'd never been to prison before. And I didn't know what to get. And this kid came up to me, a little black guy, 28 years old. Never going to get out of prison. Never. This guy I was with, we stopped by the day-old donut shop and got 3 dozen day-old donuts. And we took them in. This is Chino Prison. We went through the guard. We gave him our IDs. We gave him everything. They ate those 3 dozen donuts in about 2 seconds, and here comes the guards. They said, you can't do that. You can't bring stuff. I didn't know. You know, we'd bring sugar out for the coffee, and it's gone. But you know what? They do things with it, isn't it? And I didn't know that, and, you know, I wasn't in charge, so I didn't think I was going to get in any trouble, but they reprimanded us and told us we could never do that again. But it's just things that you go through, and now, you know, they go out to Bob Wiley now and stuff. I don't stop and get any donuts. But it's just the funny things that we go through in life of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's really a wonderful world, and the people we meet, and I was at the Riviera Country Club, like I say, and they have a $10 dinner meeting there. Which, if you're ever down in that area, you can go to the dinner meeting at 6 o'clock on Thursday. So I go in there and sit down. When I sit down next to this lady, she's not very attractive or anything, but her name is Marilyn Chambers. She did the Ivory Snow commercials, and she did the porn movie Behind the Green Door, which none of you guys know about. But she was sober at the time, and she died sober, her and her husband both. And it's just the people that you meet going through this program, you know, going this way. And I was up to Vegas for a convention, and the main speaker at the time was 35 years sober. And then I heard that evening that he went out and got drunk. You know, so I mean, you got your ups and downs, and you got your people. But if you practice the principles of this program and keep it simple, and then when I got sober, we had steel bumpers, and everybody had a sticker on their bumper, and you'd go to a stoplight, and you have Easy Does It, you'd honk your horn, hey, you know, that's your buddy. But I was working down in Salinas, we were over at Morro Bay working, and I had this guy that went down to the bus stop every night, Spike Doyle, his name was Pat. I said, what do you do down there? I didn't know. So me and my brother went down there with him. And boom, he goes right to a drug dealer. How the hell do you know he's a drug dealer? And, you know, I didn't think much of it. But then as I travel around, I mean, I walk up and, you know, I see you or do whatever's going on. And eventually something clicks. You're an alcoholic. And somehow we shake hands and we share our experience, strength, and hope. And even though we're anonymous, we still, you got a feeling in your heart or somewhere that these people are, feel something's wrong with them. And that's what you know me. And it's just the greatest feeling in the world when you're in Missouri or Illinois or Louisiana, Abbeville, Louisiana, and you meet an alcoholic. You know, because that opens up your whole life, because then you know somebody to go to that meeting with. And it just projects into everything. And it's just an enjoyable life. I just can't believe it. And, you know, as I was growing up, me and three of my buddies, three of us had lost our dads, and the other one, Danny Deneen, his dad was plain drunk. He had 9 kids in his family, and we're still friends to this day, except for Jimmy. He died. His last name was Off, and he promised us he'd name his son Jack. His last name was A-H-L-F, but it's pronounced Off, and when he died, he never did. He named his kid Jim. But, you know, Danny, Dave, and I, and that's what I'm going to see when I get back to Illinois, Rock Island, Illinois. That's where Dave and Danny are. And Danny and I are both in the program, and Dave's had 2 DUIs, but he's not in the program. But he quit drinking. But you know, it's just how life, you know, we just grew up through school, and then on Friday night, I went to school a half a day and worked a half a day, and then I worked at a gas station because it was just me and Mom. And on Friday, somehow, the girls would always get order to me for what they wanted that night, blackberry brandy, vodka, whatever, and they would pay me, you know, bottle was $3, and they'd give me 5, I'd make money, you know. So it was a pretty good feeling, but then they always had a slumber party, and then somehow that night, like I say, you know, you had a telephone, you know, but somehow somebody would telephone somebody at the gas station, or, you know, what, 10 o'clock, my mom and dad's going out, you guys can all come over, so we'd all go over and get in trouble. But every week I was the news supplier because I had Lyle Newsbaum. He was in the same grade as me, but he was 3 years older, and he looked 40 years older. So, I mean, he was buying booze at 12, and then Lyle, the alcohol got him. He blew his brains out with a shotgun. And, you know, and as I was growing up, it's funny, we hunted back in Illinois, and we lived on a farm, and, you know, we lived in town and everything, but everybody had a pickup truck, had a shotgun or a rifle or something in the back of their window. And everybody had a pistol in the behind their seat. and all the scraps and all the fights and everything that I seen through my life and had, I never seen a knife pulled. I never seen a gun pulled. I mean, we just fought with our bare knuckles and enjoyed it, you know, black eyes, you know, knockout teeth or whatever. Then, you know, I think about it all the time that, you know, these gangs like them idiots, you know, killed 15 or 18 more today. You know, I think everybody in the world should just carry a gun, and it's ridiculous, you know, that what we have to go through in society today. But it's such a small world. I mean, as I was growing up, I mean, it took 4 days to get to California. Now you can be anywhere in the world in one day. And it's just a program of working with the program and keeping it simple. And I just enjoyed Alcoholics Anonymous so much. Before I got up here, and I was sharing with Rick, when I met Rick and this other kid, he's up from San Diego. But in Orange County, everything a little bit different, but I was also a guru down there. You know, I had a meeting where I was the man, you know, the hut down in Westminster. I mean, they knew Buster was at that meeting. And I sponsored a lot of people and did a lot of things. And in my early sobriety, he'd call central office when you and somebody else would be available for 12 steps. So we did call at 2, 3 in the morning and go out and try to help people that were drunk or getting drunk or whatever. And that was another step, you know, you can do to try to help people when you get sobriety and you share it, you know. We picked this guy up, Tim Turvey. And he stayed sober and he got drunk. He stayed sober and he got drunk. And he called me with a couple other guys. Three of us went down to see him at his trailer. And he was Homer Simpson. He was bright yellow. And when I walked in the front door, I knew the guy was dying, or he was dead. And he died a couple days later. But your liver just eats you alive. And he's a young man. He couldn't stay sober. And he had a good life. He was a pilot and everything. He just, it doesn't matter what you are, a movie star, work at McDonald's, or whatever you choose to do in life, you know, you can make it work. It's a pretty good program. Like I say, all the famous people I've met, and all the unfamous people I met, you know, they're all the same. They're just good people that are stayed sober and did all the things they could in life, you know. And the whole year I was overseas, I never drank nothing. And every day we got two cans of Schlitz and 10 cans rationed to us, or two cans of Coca-Cola and 10 cans. You can imagine what they taste like. And I never drank the whole year I was overseas. I went overseas 220 pounds, came home 158 because I knew I was going to die every day. And it's no fun, you know, when you're in with the weirdos. And it's, but when I got home, I was going to get into construction. My brother got me in. He was a carpenter, and I was going to go to work September 1st, and I got home August 3rd, and I got out of the Navy August 11th. So I went to this bar every day, Father's, which has a beautiful Polish sausage sandwich and a pitcher of beer for $2. So I got to know the barmaid pretty good, and I said, I'm a POW. So after about the third day, she gave me my sandwich and beer free. So 27 days later, I said, I'm not a POW no more. Her jaw dropped. She said, what do you mean? I said, I was a person out of work. Now I'm going back to work. I got 27 days of free booze and, you know, just things that your alcoholic mind does to you. It's just a weird thing that we go through. I mean, I never hurt anybody physically. I did a lot of mental damage to people. And, you know, my dad used to beat my mom and my brother. That's why he went to the Marine Corps, to get tough, to come home and beat my dad up. But he died before my brother got home. And, you know, mom, I don't understand a woman staying in that kind of a relationship, but I know they do. You know, for what reason, I don't know. And I don't know why a man stays in it when he's, you know, he's abused too. But it's alcoholism's tough. And my dad, he would have never stopped drinking. I remember stories of him coming home, hitting street lights, you know, wrecking the family van. And, you know, you go back 1963, there's five kids with a four-bedroom house, a brand-new Oldsmobile, brand-new Buick. My dad brought home $60 a week. My mom brought home $38 after taxes. We had less than $100 a week. How good you could live back in those days. Now you bring home $10,000, you can't even make ends meet. But it's just society, how we live and how much faster and how many more people we got. Of course, back then, even if we got a slow payday, you know, we'd still go out, and every weekend my dad would drive the family to aunt, uncle's house, and basically all we'd do is go get drunk. Not me at the time, because I was a baby, but everybody in the family, uncles and everything. My aunt died, and my uncle, he borrowed $100 at the time from his boss, Roy Chrysler, and he went out and he got drunk. We didn't find him for a week. And spent the whole $100, which at that time was a lot of money. And that's just how alcoholism affects you. And you have no sense of value or anything. I mean, alcohol is the most important thing in the world. And until you run out of money, then you start lying, stealing, begging, or whatever you got to do to get it. That's where you go. And luckily, I didn't have to get in any trouble to get any. But, you know, I understand where people come from to get it. I'm leasing 18 acres out on Dinuba and Riggins, Walnuts, and they cleaned up 42 homeless people out there. I've been out there 3 years, and I know them all by first and last name. And Tommy's been out there 26 years. You think he's leaving? He ain't leaving. And, you know, the cops are out there, and they give them tickets, $200, $400, $600. Then they go to warrant, then they go to jail, and they just come back out. But, you know, if they would just, and I had the mayor, I played poker with Amy, the ex-mayor of Visalia, and she says, Buster, she says, we have places for these people, clean places. We'll feed them, we'll house them, we'll clothe them. She said, but they won't give up their dogs, they won't quit drinking, and they won't quit drugging. So, I mean, you know, it's Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for everybody. I heard it on the radio again today that there's some place up in Fresno that they give you a treatment for 12 hours and you're cured. So if you got enough money to go there, you can be cured in 12 hours. But, you know, I don't understand those programs either. And, you know, I find recovery and the houses like that. I mean, if you go to meetings in Tulare County, you hear so much success out of Pine Recovery. But, you know, as I see the 30 or 40 walk down to the Lano Club every Monday night, I'm thinking if three of those stay sober, that's success. And that's all we need. And I think there's 10 or 15 million of us right now. And, you know, as I was traveling, I got to go see Bill's grave. And not that that means anything to anybody. And Bill didn't mean I never met him, but I've read about him and all this stuff, and I just figured that was nice to go see him. I didn't put flowers on his grave or nothing. Big monument, tombstone. So he is kind of famous. And he has helped a lot of people. And my brother, he's was a delegate. He got in so deep into this shit. I couldn't believe it. So I was working back in New York, and the delegate sent him to New York, so he was up in his hotel room. So I went over and picked him up for dinner, me and a friend of mine, and a kid that was working with me, so he reached in the refrigerator, got a Heineken, and I'm thinking, my brother's there, hey, he's paying for his room, he's going to go speak, and I didn't say anything, and then a couple weeks later, I said, what'd you do about that Heineken missing? He goes, I went down to the liquor store, bought one, put it back in there. It's just, you never think, you know, because I don't drink, you know, everybody in the world, you know, alcohol's legal, so I mean, you can drink it, if your hats are off, you can drink like a gentleman. I just, I don't see that I could ever have my house, my half off to another bottle of booze, and I wasn't even a hard drinker. I mean, I was basically a beer and a vodka drinker, and I couldn't drink the hard stuff. We were down in San Diego, and this friend of ours, friend of my brother's, he got the last Cadillac convertible in 1966 or 1967 from Detroit. He was from Detroit. He had connections. We went down to San Diego to see it, and he had a bottle of Crown Royal. So I had about 24 or 30 beers, and I started drinking Crown Royal. So I passed out in the back of my brother's pickup truck coming back to Orange County from San Diego, and he got lit up. So this cop, you know, he came through the sobriety test and everything, and he said, my brother, he's in the back, he's sober. So he comes back there and slaps me a couple times, and I get out, and I couldn't walk the line. And I said, officer, I said, if you'll let me drive up to that Denny's, I said, I'll stay there for 2 hours and drink coffee. He said, if you promise me, he says, I'll let you do it. I said, thank you, sir. I got in the driver's car, drove up over that ramp, drove down, drove home. I mean, you just, I mean, why do you believe an alcoholic, you dumb bastard? And my brother and my best friend were in the back sleeping then, so I guess they just wanted to wake me up so I'd drive home. But it's just hard to believe, you know, I had my brother, my older brother, me and my brother, I did U.S. Open golf tournaments for 5 years for Phillips Grand Music Corporation, so I got to travel for 5 years. I started at the Congressional Club in 1997, and, you know, I got to meet Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer, all the big boys, Phil Mickelson. I worked with Phil Mickelson's dad because he invented the scope that went over the thing. And then we were in Pinehurst, North Carolina, and my brother says, why don't you call Bob and have him come out here and help us. We were on the road, you know, we were on the road for 10 years. So I called my older brother, had him out there. We were in Pennsylvania, we were going into Pinehurst, kind of North Carolina. So I left my older brother back there, gave him a blank check to pay the drywaller or whatever to finish up my job there. And I gave him a bus ticket to meet us up in the Pinehurst, North Carolina. And he called me about 2 days later and says, hey, can I make this check out for $3,000 more and buy me a vehicle? I said, okay, come on. So he bought it and he met us up there, and we went from there, and I was doing the outlet centers all around the United States. You know, I had the pleasure of meeting David Looper 20 years ago out in Tulare Outlet Center. And we stayed friends through the whole, till he died. And I was pretty lucky. I've been a millionaire twice. I've been broke 3 times, and I tell you, it feels a lot better having money. And I was doing, and Roger Smith was the president of Phillips Grand Music Corporation. He flew me back to New Jersey and said, Buster, he says, don't ever offend my girls. And if you have any problems, call me. He says, I'll take care of you unless you offend my girls. They always had a girl project manager out on the jobs. So I did them for 10 years, $400,000 a year contract, and I was doing a job up in the, what's the lake up above you there in Riverside, the Outlet Center? Lake Elsinore. And I didn't go out there. I rented my brother a house and all my guys a house to live in. And I went out there the last day, and Sherry was coming down the hill. And when I got to the job, my brother told her to go fuck herself. I never called Phillips Grand Music since that day, and they've never called me. I lost a $400,000 a year contract just from my brother being a drunk and doing that. And then a year later, I was doing Eagle Hardware. Five of them. I had five of them done. I was making $160,000 profit per store. I had five more on the contract. I was going to retire, enjoy the rest of my life. And they sold it to Lowe's. And the owner of Eagle Hardware, probably a little chink up in Washington, said, oh, Buster, I'll take care of you. I'll get more. I'm going to do something else. He's, to this day, that was 15 years ago, he'd never done nothing. And you know, I don't know what it means, but it was nice. You know, I went down and my wife and I went up to Corona, and we bought a Prowler in 2000. And I'm kind of big, so I like Cadillacs. I had a Cadillac. I drove up there, and I traded my Cadillac in for this Prowler. And the window sticker price on the Prowler was $16,000. I paid $46,000 cash for it. It was the last one in Orange County, and the guy at the salesman says, I said, how can you sell that for that? He said, I can sell for anything I want. He said, that guy right there is going to buy it if you don't. Now, I didn't know if that guy was or not, but I bought it. So I traded in my Cadillac. They gave me $800 for it or something. So we're driving home down the 57th Freeway. Blah, 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 blah. I said, stop. Go back. She says, why? I said, I want my Cadillac back. She drove me back, went back, bought my Cadillac back, and drove it home. You know, it's just, and she's still got the car to this day, and she's wrecked it twice. She's got 2 DUIs, drunk in public, and a couple other drunks, but I'm in the program. So it's just how life works, you know. It's there's really it's been an enjoyable life, and I promise you I'll be sober tomorrow. I don't know about the next day, but thank you very much.